John, you good?
I'm good. Let's roll, baby.
Ladies and gentlemen, leaders and fighters for freedom and liberty and the American dream, the best is yet to come.
All right, guys. Today we are thrilled to welcome Johnny Friston, founder and managing director of Harpo's Football Club, to the show. Harpo's competes in the competitive Colorado Premier League. AI wrote this, by the way, just so everyone's clear. And boasts an accomplished roster of college, semi-pro and professional players from around the world. Welcome. Johnny himself has an extensive soccer background, playing at the college and semi-pro levels. Since launching Harpo's, he has led the team to over a dozen trophies and championships. Most recently, their first team, over 30s team, and women's team have each won multiple league titles. We need to know how you do that. Beyond competitive success, Harpo's aims to unite people through soccer and give players opportunities to develop. The club offers a pathway to the next generation of players while also fostering community. We got Johnny on because we want to discuss growth, keys to building club culture, and other advice for non-league soccer clubs and making an impact on the pitch and in their communities. So, hello, Johnny. Here's Johnny.
Hello, hello. It's nice to meet you guys, and I appreciate you having me on the pod.
No worries. Thank you for joining us. Hi, John. John's here, but he'll have his own questions.
Hey, buddy.
Thanks, John. John's just going to be doing his own work all day. He'll just be sitting on the Zoom call, just doing his actual day job. But all right, Johnny. First things first, Harpo's. Not even Harpo's. You give us the cliff notes, the elevator pitch on your soccer story up until whenever you want.
What a nice open-ended question.
There's an hour filled, right?
That's awesome. No, yeah. I mean, I'm originally from Colombia, so I was born in Colombia. I was adopted as a little kid. Grew up in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and so. I guess you could say a gringo family. My dad looks like you, Nick. You know what I mean? I'm such a blonde hair, blue-eyed. So for all intents and purposes, even though I'm Colombian and East Coast white frat boy, and I grew up playing everything youth soccer in the system in the EPYSA, Eastern Pennsylvania Youth Soccer Association. So I had a good run. Played with a lot of good players. Had a lot of coaches, diverse coaches over the years. England, UK, Germany, all that kind of background. I'm an old man, so I grew up in the old film days of camps and Gator Gum and Pele and Maradona films. And now, obviously, modern day, we have Messi and Ronaldo, but that was awesome. I think early on I learned winning mentality, fighting through adversity, camaraderie, collaboration, not always being the best player, honestly. I was good, but I wasn't great. I definitely wasn't excellent. So I had to learn how to fit into that team dynamic and build rapport and relationships with people, regardless what kind of hat I was wearing. I always wanted to get out of Pennsylvania, but I went to college in Pennsylvania too. So I went to Western PA, which for those who know, the split is down the middle at Penn State, and they're two different worlds. Everything to the west is like the Midwest, like Pittsburgh, Buffalo, Cleveland, and then everything east is proper East Coast, so Philly, DC, New York, Jersey. So I went to Allegheny College. I barely managed to get out of there, man. In a small little industrial town, it was absolutely wild and super cheap, and I got rowdy. But I finished my senior thesis. I played a little bit. I made lifelong friends, and then eventually, my wife is from Erie, Pennsylvania, and so we met at the tail end of school. And then, DC, Colorado. Since 2000, which is really odd to say, scary to say, because I've been here half my life. But yeah, that was the journey in a nutshell, and then all kinds of travel and adventures in between.
For sure. So was the root of Harpo's, or whatever Harpo's was before it became Harpo's, just I want to have a kick around with my buddies, or did you have a bigger goal in mind from day one?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I bounced around some different teams here in the City of Boulder League, and I didn't feel like I found a click. I didn't feel like I found the right group, and it was fun, but it wasn't great. And so I met these dudes from a team which called the Barrel House. So University of Colorado at Boulder is called CU, Go Buffs, Buffaloes. And so those guys had gone and played at different schools like Clemson and other places out of state and didn't dig it. And so they came home and they went to CU. So they founded the Barrel House in 97. I became friends with a lot of these guys in the early 2000s. And then I joined in 05 when it was Harpo's, which is the namesake is a bar and grill, which no longer exists, which sucks to say, but it was the pub of pubs. And so, yeah, I came in 05 and then started to really manage and build a team in 08. So to answer that question, we didn't really start to change the branding and the culture and create the ethos until like 2010-ish. And we took the club national champions from CU as kind of our foundation. That was literally like a starting 11, meshed them with everyone, kind of came up with the vision and the plan and started to execute on it from there.
So you've been not at the ground level, right? Because there's always been a rec stroke, semi-serious rec presence in the US, but you've been kind of at the ground floor of like this recent burgeoning of a vague organization of ragtag clubs that we're seeing now. Like that was not started by you, but you were around before that even happened, I guess. Like this is unprecedented to you.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's crazy because, I mean, I know the term now, even in American nomenclature, is like Sunday League, you know, or men's league or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we kind of took that and saw the opportunity to build something that, you know, maybe I as a player and a coach and manager before I hadn't had, and then saw the opportunity for, you know, the community and the state. And so it was like bit by bit, it was all about getting the right people in, and then that really changed everything. You know, we always say that people make the place. And so it wasn't just me or a handful, it was just this inertia. And then we're like, yeah, all right, let's ride the wave together and let's keep going and see how far we can take it.
I know John's got an ongoing battle with like that nomenclature of like whether it's semi-pro, semi-pro or non-league or whatever. Like, there is a like a marketing positioning issue at hand here, right? Like, how do we present what we're doing to a market that doesn't really get that concept? Like back home in the UK, non-league is just, you know, it's de facto. Everyone knows what it is, and there's no inference on it. But over here, there's definitely baggage that comes with it. So, how have you even tried to sort of overcome that?
Yeah, it's interesting because in my mind, like, and I think, I'm trying to think who said this, whether it was our friends Bavarians or Christos in Baltimore, they said they're professionally amateur. And I thought that was funny, but also kind of true. You know what I mean? Yeah. In a regard. So we tried to up the level from not just being, you know, eight of us showing up to a game, falling out of a car with a cloud of smoke and going to play in City of Boulder League, which we did for a long time, right? That was the original Harpo's. That's what it was. I mean, it was Animal House and, you know, all that other kind of stuff. It was crazy. And it still is, to be honest with you. But, and I'm still here, which is amazing. But no, I mean, the next step was actually saying, okay, well, we need to play and then we want to train and like, let's bring in better players and let's bring in even more competitive people and then just keep growing, growing, growing. So, you know, I don't take any offense, and our group and our club doesn't take any offense to when it's called non-league, Sunday league, it's amateur. I guess the thing that I don't dig as much, and I think this is where it gets a little gray, is what's pro development? What's semi-pro, semi-pro? Because here, like you said, it's completely different than the UK and even USL too, which we've all been involved in one way or another for decades. You know, that path to pro, you're only talking about like the top 10%, 5% from there that are really going to go and that are doing it. Everyone else, when we go out and we scrimmage and we play those sides, MPSL sides too, we've either tied or beat all of them, you know what I mean, consistently now for 10 years. So semi-pro and pro development, I get. But the path to pro to me is the difference, right? And so we call it path to bro, jokingly. And then we have a hashtag, you know, bro to pro or pro to bro, because we have people that go up and down both ways. And so I think you just have to be honest with yourself with what you're doing. And I think we've always been.
For sure.
I've always thought like just to that point, and Nick and I had this talk many times, It's which way are you facing, right? Are you talking to the players or are you talking to your neighbor who you want to come watch the boys play?
Right.
Because when we started the club and had to explain what this level of amateur soccer even is, semi-pro, they go, oh, semi-pro, cool. And if you're like, oh, we're an amateur team, that doesn't ring a bell with the Americans, right?
Right.
And I actually lately I've actually been more in favor of just this amateur soccer chaos, adapting minor league as the term, because Americans understand it. And it's not semi-pro in that you're making a small wage. So that's not like the purists say, well, that's not really what we are. Well, no, but it's professionally amateur, right? So it is semi-professional. If you're not talking about wages, it is semi-professional, right? The experience is semi-professional. The clubs operate semi-professionally. But okay, you purists, you're going to bitch. So, okay, then we'll call it some. How about minor league? Nobody's claimed it yet, right? So let's just claim minor league soccer as our thing. And again, I'm more, like Nick says, I'm more worried about what the fans consider it than I do what the players consider it.
Right.
But that's kind of where I'm like two-faced, where it depends who I'm talking to. I will use terms interchangeably, depending on who my particular audience is or even just the individual I'm talking to make sure that like it's going to resonate that we are not, this is not me kicking around on a Sunday with my buddies. Like, this is a elite experience for you and your family to come watch. Right. So that's kind of where I trip out. But just to long-winded question to you then, as you're player facing, don't laugh, Nick, as you're player facing, and you're going into recruit, you're winning games because of recruiting and developing this culture within your group, I assume. Mm-hmm. What is that like, either on a seasonal basis or week to week? What, like, how do you build rosters that compete at a high level and not lose the aura that is your brohood?
Yeah, you know, it's a really good question too. I mean, I guess I don't really even talk about it, to be honest with you. So like, I love your delineation though between the audience and like minor league. And where I grew up in PA, that's what sometimes they would call like our old Hershey Wildcats and who else? We had the City Islanders and then Penn FC. That's what it all morphed into. And so minor league became more acceptable compared to like, say, Major League Soccer, even in the early days, like way back when, right? For us, I don't really have to frame it because it also depends on the audience, to your point. So like, who am I speaking with? So like, am I speaking with a kid who's, you know, 18, just finished high school, got recruited to go play in school, has a summer in between, he's better than all the other levels, including like MLS Next, doesn't want to do it, or wants a summer off before he goes and wants to play at a decent enough level? That's way different than having a conversation with like a recently retired ex-pro, for example, or one guy, Juddy McKinney. I remember he came to us, he had just retired, you know, at the ripe old age of like 27 in the NASL. And here he was, literally a couple of weeks before, hanging out with Peter Will and marking Raul for the New York Cosmos. And here he is popping beers with us and hanging out in the lab, you know, marking the local striker from, you know, the opposing rival team. I think it varies. It's like what you're talking about, though. It's setting the right expectations with that audience. So I know I don't necessarily have to sell or oversell an ex-pro. Like, if they still want to play and they want to get on with it, they've been there, done that, but we have other guys who've been in there, done that. So they still have to come in and earn the right and figure that out. But are we training 5 days a week? Are they getting paid a certain wage? You know, is there a certain expectation? It's their job. And if someone gets hurt, you know, or they want someone to get hurt and take their spot. No, it's not like that, but it's definitely not, hey, I'm going to go down and kick at the park. And then the 18-year-olds who think they're good, for the most part, I'd say, even when we know they're good players, when they come in, they get a dose of reality real fast. 18-year-old high school kid who thinks he's the man because he's crushing it in MLS Next. And then he comes in and meets Arcafa, who played in La Liga, you know, in Spain for Real Betis. And he's like, whoa, I haven't seen this before. And then we put them all together, stir it up, and then make the squad.
What is your, as managing director, that could be a million different things, and it probably is. What are the day-to-day things that you deal with? I'm hijacking the interview. Sorry, Nick, you can go now. I'd imagine it's a lot, playing side and non-playing side within the club, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, John, I mean, I was looking you guys up and I've heard of you before. And so it was cool to like get the invite. And, you know, it's always good to have these conversations and it's good to put it out there. You have to be a chameleon. You have to be a jack of all trades. I remember my advisory board buddy, who's like a VC and he's become a friend and been there and done that with everything entrepreneurial. The one day he called me a generalist and I took it as like a slight. And then, and he's like, no, dude, you're a CEO and you're a delegator and you're a leader and you build teams and you build culture and you do all these other things. And then we kind of went through and like almost like productized that, if you will. And then I was like, okay, all right, I actually dig that. And so to answer your question, it's everything. It's everything off the field. It's everything on the field. So managing director is a pseudonym, if you will, for a startup where you have like an LLC and then you're going. And that's technically what Harpo's is in some ways, right? So I wear multiple hats. So I'm the manager. Think of like a Sir Alex Ferguson, like the old days, like I'm that, right? So I'm running the club, literally, even at like kind of the board level, like I'm influencing that, doing all that. But the other piece of the managerial hat is to bring in the right coaches, to bring in the right players, to do all the recruiting. And then again, to, you know, put a product on the field that's going to be successful. So like we all work together in collaboration, but yeah, I'm the one who does a lot of that recruiting and brings people in. And then obviously from a tactical standpoint, the formations, picking the team, really the psychology of it. I love that Sir Alex Ferguson makes that comparison. They're like, what's management? He's like, psychology. They're one and the same. And so I'm all about that too. From the early days being bootstrapped, you know, you have to do everything. As much as people want to help and have helped and still help, there's still a lot that we do. So like I had to become a content manager and build the website, manage the socials, you know, pay the bills, get the sponsorship, set up the social events, help people get into college, help people get into grad school, help people get contracts playing at the next level. You know, you name it. The easiest way to put it is I feel I'm responsible for the people that are under our umbrella and our care. And so that's their physical, mental, and emotional well-being. And as you know, life ain't easy. It's not easy. So you have all these peaks and valleys. So it's managing all of that as for the people that are involved with us, the partners that are involved with us, and then the product on the field too. It's a lot.
It's not much, though, is what you're saying. Just nice and easy. Just a quiet hobby that gives you a lot of time to relax at home with the kids.
Well, that's my wife's point of contention because, you know, I've had the day job and used to travel a ton before COVID and then settled that down. But, you know, I had the day job, have Harpo's. Now we have three teams. We're working on some ancillary projects maybe we can talk about a little bit later, which is the path to pro. And that's extremely real. Mm-hmm. Then I have the consulting, the executive coaching. Two kids who both play, and then my wife, and then my parents are here too. So it's a lot.
You people who do things, I don't understand you, either of you. But crack on, the world is better for both of you.
But we get off on, right? You know, we all do, hence having this conversation. Everyone's passionate, and I loved the next level of, I guess, the next tier, you know, and having conversations and seeing what this is and building up. And you hear it in definitely in the software space, you know, because some people are obsessed with it, but I'm obsessed with football. I'm obsessed with football as a sport. I'm obsessed with football as a platform for doing good and building community and getting people together and giving them opportunities. I'm obsessed with it. So anytime my wife gets mad, I'm like, it's not about football. It's the platform.
That's emotional. That's unfair though, isn't it? Like, it's bigger than me. You can't just blame
it. It's not about me. It's way bigger.
Yeah. All right. I'm sure Mrs. Johnny would have exactly the same response, right? Let's touch on that community thing then. Like, from the sounds of it, and not having done an awful lot of digging, you are very much player focused as an operation, as a club, and the success that you've got, right, speaks to that, right? Like, you're putting pretty much all your resources into that. Does Boulder know you exist, do you think? The soccer community?
Yeah, you know, it's Colorado's, we're on an island, even though we're landlocked. We're literally on an island. So that's the difference in opportunity between, say, us and me even being back in Philly. You know, there's already Westchester United and Blaze and what they're doing. There's already Larry and Christos and Baltimore. You know, there's already the dudes who are up running Lansdowne Boys, you know, like, and we're in touch with all these guys, especially the old NPSL sides that went to NASL, now USL. Very good friends, Minneapolis City, who are done an amazing job. And my college mate is the COO of Detroit City. So that's how we went and played them, you know, and had that experience. And that was super motivating back in 18. But yeah, I mean, the community piece has been built up at a grassroots level. So it literally was going to the bar, having World Cup parties, you know, volunteering, you know, at the shelter, donating clothes, having our guys coach. But what it's become is just this spiderweb network, you know, a spiderweb network of everything across all categories. So all of our guys, all of our ladies, regardless of their generation, race, creed, color, religion, we have contacts in a network everywhere. And that's gone from part of my network, but also their networks, to not just be local and state and regional or national, but I've been in global business for decades. So never really get on a call or have a meeting or meet someone at a bar or cafe, or you're walking wherever you're at and you can't be able to strike up a conversation, find a common denominator, and then just have a go and make an instant connection with them from a relationship standpoint wise. So the community is bought into what this is and was, especially during the Open Cup. We got a lot of good PR then. So the local newspapers, the local station, we were in the Guardian. One of our guys went on to, they now, the Roos brothers, they did a Webby award winning video for us in 15. They now literally make commercials for Nike, Adidas, Dodge Charger, Oscar Isaac. Like they're globally famous, right? So the other thing related to all this is Harpo's, we're all about developing like people and leaders in life, but now more than ever, all these years later, we have more entrepreneurs that are involved in every category of life and business than ever. So we probably have had about 1,000 come through, and now we've opened a ton of other doors too, bringing in the women's team.
Yeah, it's so multifaceted, right? There's not a switch that you can flick and like get people to buy into it, and there's not an ad that you can run that guarantees like uptick or whatever. It's there's so many things, and it's such a long-term game. And as John always says, right, nothing beats shoe leather, boots on the floor, of just go out there and glad handing and meeting people at bars. And it's really tough work going to bars. I'm sure you two really suffer for your art, but also going to those really stuffy like community events, for want of a better phrase, that you know, where you're not getting 17 people through the gate today, but at some point there's a sponsorship conversation to be had. On the sponsorship thing then, like, where does that, without giving us access to your spreadsheets, how is it all funded? Because the more successful you are, the more traveling you've got to do, right? You've got to go outside of the city limits. Sure. And like, how?
Yeah. I mean, because we're landlocked and on the island, there's a lot of travel that happens in state. You know, so that's always been, I guess, kind of a positive. But then for Open Cup, we've had to travel. So a lot of that is chipping in out of their own coffers. That's me covering a ton of stuff over time, and then working with different sponsors to not just get, you know, their merchandise or their product or their services, but then also some cash along the way too, right? We love our beer. We love our craft beer here in Colorado. So, you know, yeah, I paid for that. My liver's probably paid for that. My waistline just paid for that, but it's all been in good fun. And that's kind of how we've gotten through over the years. And I remember doing an interview before, and my wife, you know, she heard it. She's like, how much, what did you say? So ever since then, I've stopped saying it. But yeah, I definitely invested, and I hate saying I and me and stuff, but invested a ton of money personally over the years. But
is that,
I was gonna say, that said, like, now with the vision and the strategy and the process and the plan, it's all worth it. Everything we've ever done, you know, individually and as a group, is now going to hopefully reach a new height, so that, you know, when we're talking about sponsorships, it's completely different, and we want to play at another level, and then bring everyone in and give them something that they don't have here currently with the professional team setups.
All right. Do you want to shed any light on this plan of yours that you keep alluding to, or is it still top secret?
I don't know. I mean, it's so in 15, 16, we got really interested in the business of soccer. And so I was curious to understand, you know, what are the nooks and crannies? What do the spreadsheets look like? What's the P&L? How do you actually go and launch a club? What does that entail? And so one of the first folks we reached out to was Peter Will. You know, he's like the godfather of launching clubs across multiple leagues. And he was just amazing. And he's still been a good advisor and mentor to us. We've explored all different leagues, all the acronyms, due diligence, including with his NISA back in the day, and didn't pull the trigger on that. But then just kind of learning, like, hey, what does this look like? Being really close with Minneapolis City, Dennis Crowley at New York Stockade, Kingston Stockade. He's been like a godsend when he started to publish, you know, all of his data and his information. I'm like, this is just priceless. This is, and hopping on calls. So, you know, since then it's been calls with coaches and technical directors with the likes of Frank Gallup, to speaking with Jordan Gardner, who's, you know, the billionaire that owns Swansea and Dundalk and others abroad. Where do you go? What does this look like? How would we do a raise? Talking to WeFunder and the whole community around, which is now something that we're going to drive forward on the way to Detroit City and our friends Chattanooga FC did and others. So it's just been this amalgamation of educating ourselves, getting knowledge, building the network, and kind of going from there with all of it. So our goal is to launch initially a men's and then a women's professional team in USL. And we've been working towards that for about 3.5 years.
Does not that's indicative of how much work is involved in it, right? Like this,
it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous, let alone the whole capital piece, which literally prices out probably 99% of the potential suitors to go and even take on a project like that, because it is immense.
I'm going to play devil's advocate for the minute, all right? Given the amount of work that you've put in creating this amateur, for want of a better phrase, behemoth, why? What's the drive? What's the end goal?
The end goal is to own a number of global portfolio clubs to pull a Man City, but do it and not be assholes. You know, to do it with our buddies, do it with our friends.
Yeah. Just a little bit more money.
You guys are thick as thieves. Like, that's the thing. Like, all of us to just be able to, you know, maybe not be playing, maybe not be coaching, maybe not be managing, but to be sitting in there, you know, in the stadium with our friends, with our families, with the trophies, with the culture, everything that we build up, and then have a different platform. But that's where along the way it's changed from just, hey, let's kind of build up this ethos of winning and excellence. But like, then it's like, what about people? What can we do to give back? I mean, been a natural leader since I was a kid and trying to help people since I was a kid, and now I'm old. So I'm like, all right, well, those lessons learned get passed on to everyone else who comes into the group, and then they teach me and us as much as anyone else. So it's just going to be getting on the high dive, jumping off, making that big splash, one in a positive way, everyone seeing it. But then it's, what else can we do in terms of being good people, social good, DEIB, all those things that I feel are very synthetically productized and monetized in the corporate world. And I've been in the corporate world forever. That's part of our tagline. You know, we're authentic and we're respected for what we've done, but having a bigger platform and bringing more people in, I think is going to be the biggest thing. It's going to be huge to see that impact, not just on the immediate group, but hopefully for generations. So there's about a dozen ancillary businesses that are related to this as well. And those will launch in an iterative fashion as part of this overall umbrella.
Hey guys, super grateful to you all for tuning in and joining us on this journey to grow soccer in the US. You're the reason we keep on doing it. So a few of you have asked how you can support a podcast, and we thank you for that. So today we're shouting out Buy Me A Coffee. It's a platform that makes it so easy to give us a little digital thank you. You just go over to Buy Me A Coffee page, which is buymeacoffee.com/DKCUBuildIt. That's buymeacoffee.com/DKCUBuildIt, all one word. Pick your level and then buy us a coffee. That tip goes straight to us right here at DKCU HQ, and it is a super easy way, hopefully for you guys, to show some direct support and appreciation of this podcast. Look, we know everyone can't buy us a coffee, and that's okay. You tuning in and spreading the word is more than enough. If you do enjoy the show and are looking for a simple way to give back, check out our Buy Me A Coffee page. Just a $3 coffee is hugely appreciated and helps the show keep on ticking. However you support the Thought Pod, thank you sincerely from the bottom of our hearts. On with the show. Right, John, I know, knowing you, there's going to be 1,001 questions, so strap in.
No. This is an easy one. Like, we talked about you doing a lot of things, but you also you're like me, you like to use the word we a lot. Yeah. So give me the structure of the club, personnel wise. What does that org chart look like?
Sure. So we our kind of nicknames, you know, and then we put those out there, et cetera, for what's going on. So the original team, the first team is FC, so that's the first team. So FC is a squad of about 35 players. So we have four keepers, the rest are field players.
I'm the manager, and I have a head coach, Kyle Leinberger, and then two associate coaches, Kevin Pugh, who's also our goalkeeper coach, and then Jason Green, who's our assistant coach. So all of them are licensed. I'm the only one who's not licensed. I've always had A and B licensed guys all around me, but I don't have any badges. I don't even have grassroots. I'm not interested in doing, to be honest with you. That's the setup of the first team. The second team, same thing. We have a manager, this guy, Big Mac. He looks like a big grizzly bear, huge beard, 6'5", playing NAIA. He's been here in Colorado from Kansas for years. So Big Mac runs OG, which is like over 30 team, which is kind of morphed into another first team because all those guys helped build us to this point, and they can still freaking ball out. And regardless of age, now we have all these younger guys that are coming in, and it's kind of become like, in some ways, the development team or the farm team, if you will, you know, and then maybe go to FC. So that's been good. So we have Big Mac, Kevin Rosser, and Joey Matavac, who run OG. And then we have W, so the women's team. So that's new just this season. So they had two kind of de facto captains managers, Rachel Cooper and Shayna Swain. And then we looked outside and we looked at, because they're very keen to have a female coach. And so we looked at the types of people we wanted to bring in for that role, and the availability, it just wasn't there. So we said, hey, listen, in the interim, would you be okay if some of our bros who do have experience that want to be a part of this would come in and assist you at least for this first season in of transition? So that's two of our players, George Marchant, who's from England, and Colorado School of Mines, and then Juddy McKinney, who I mentioned before, who's an ex-pro and has also coached at multiple levels. So that's our setup. But overall, in terms of like the number of players, it's probably about, you're talking about close to 100 in the player pool. That doesn't include new recruits, trialists, people that reach out. We reach out to them, they come in, and then you have the coaching staff. And then in some ways, I'm the wizard behind the curtain. And then other ways, it's a complete, you know, collaborative team effort. But as we scale, that obviously has to change a bit. And so that's a big reason that I'm back in startup land in the day job, because we had to get under the hood again and see what that looks like, as opposed to being, you know, global companies, and it's a whole other stratosphere. We need to get back into the grassroots of that and what we're going to need to do when it's time to flip the switch.
So with the front office stuff, sponsorships, community outreach, all those kinds of things, you're still kind of by yourself with all that stuff. Is there a requirement from your coaches and players to be involved with those things, or how do you manage that?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a requirement. It's more of that like willingness, and that also kind of like understood you. Like when you come in, like, what are you going to contribute? I mean, we have a set of questions, for example, when someone reaches out, the cold turkey, we don't know them, because the best thing are referrals, right? I mean, you guys know this, like, so cool. One of your good guys, good players, like, hey, my buddy's just moved here or whatever. Can he come out and play? And it's like ready-made turnkey, probably on and off the field. But when it's suddenly completely brand new, you know, that's one of our questions is like, what qualities you're going to bring to our club? And that has nothing to do with playing, right? Because you already asked the playing questions. And then it's like, what are some of your interests off the field? And so that kind of delves into the, how long are you planning to be in like the Denver or Colorado area? And those three things usually give us some really good insight, even with a total stranger. And then, you know, okay. And even now, like, it's the same type of thing. Like, for example, if I need commercial real estate, I go to our old club captain, Dan Campbell. He's the vice president at UDR and sits in Denver and can help with anything related to that, which is helping with the pro project. You know, oh, well, what are we going to do about sports recovery? You know, that kind of stuff. Well, our old trainer runs the CU, University of Colorado Boulder sports medicine program now. So guys can go there for anything. We have Denver sports recovery. I need a guy who's in cannabis. We got a lot of that here. A bunch of guys are here in cannabis. So they run dispensaries, they run grow house, they do whatever. My one guy he's the elk hunter. So he's been training the last like couple of years to go hunt elk. He just bagged an elk, which is cool. But then he just launched in parallel, being in the field like that, he launched his own hat company that's specific to being outdoors and customized this hat. It's called Leaf. So we just have all these different entities and things that are going on, and then everyone chips in if and how they can.
How do you keep, I mean, obviously you're hands-on for the last 15 years, but how do you, tangibly manage the alumni spider web you've built? Because it sounds like that's like once people stop playing, they don't necessarily, they formally leave the club, but they kind of don't, right? How do you just kind of like keep that? Don't like the alumni culture. How do you cultivate that?
Well, that's a good question. So LinkedIn's big and obviously socials and whatnot. But, you know, it was those guys early on, you know, even from my time when I first came in that helped establish the culture. So everyone's bought in. And that's another piece that's significant is that a lot of times through the sponsorships and other investments, we don't have guys pay dues, right? So that no one's paying dues to play, but we also don't pay our players. So this harkens back to the minor league and the semi-pro and all that stuff. When we've gone to tournaments, including Open Cup and all these other things, I feel like we're in the minority. We're like one of the only teams and clubs that we've seen when we gone to the next level that doesn't pay their players. So everyone's here by choice and everyone buys in, if you will, by choice, and is all about a by choice. So we're asking them to come in and leave the place better than when they found it. And I'd say 99.9%, that's the case now over decades. So it's just, you have those relationships, you have that rapport. And I'm big on proactive communication. So if something comes up during the day and I got a business call, right? I'm like, oh man, I've literally been up since like 5:30 this morning on all these calls. My company's in Sweden, so you're up early, 8-hour time difference. But then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, that's right. My one dude's flying in today. Hey, Alex, what's up? How's it going? Whatever. Yeah, like last night, I was wide awake at 12:30. I'm like, oh, that's right. I saw on social, Austin bagged that elk. But also, could he come and play the Open Cup game? You know? We had a wedding last weekend. 15 guys came in from all over the country for this wedding. But even though I haven't seen them tangibly in a couple of years, I still talk to them rather avidly here, there, and everywhere for one reason or another. And so it's just great. And, you know, it's just that never-ending bond, but it's also just the avid communication. And I try to be as proactive as possible with that.
Have you, labor John's point, there's so much going on under the banner of Johnny does it. Have you tried delegating and either you're like too much of a control freak or you haven't found the right people or what, or is it just never like, this is where it's done, so I'm going to keep on doing it? Like, because it doesn't sound from a mental health perspective sustainable.
Yeah, it's kind of messed up, but no, like over the years, especially in 13 to 17, I kind of found my ride or die partner. It was a guy named Steve Lepper. And Steve's from Michigan. We'd actually played against each other in Sunday League. He has a license. He was running a local youth club here called St. Rain FC in my town of Longmont, right next to Boulder, which is now part of Real Colorado. We helped broker that merger recently, called like a year or two ago. But Steve was my guy. And he was the one that I was like, wow, okay, we're kindred spirits. We were like a Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. It was like, this is it. Like, whatever I don't have, he compliments me and vice versa. And then we had a ton of synergies. And so we had a lot of success that way on and off the field, also with consulting and entrepreneurial endeavors. But Steve moved back. He moved to Vail. So physically, it was a couple hours away from us. And then that kind of changed. And then he moved to Michigan. So now it's totally changed. But that said, we have a number of different folks that help with this, that, or the other. So it's not just all on me, whether it's the graphics. We now have four different social content media companies that are starting to come in and offer one thing or another to help with the narrative, whether it's the graphics, it's the pictures, it's the video. We're going to have the team media day, the kit launch. We're working on all that kind of stuff in the background. So definitely gone from being kind of a solopreneur, you know, to having so much more of a group around us and people that are heavily engaged. But that next step, especially in 24, is formalizing all that beyond this kind of triumvirate advisory group right now, between myself and Steve and our friend Brad. There's so much more that's going to happen, but we do have folks earmarked, ready, and bought in to what it's been, to where it needs to go. And that's just, it's a quantum leap. It's such a quantum leap. It's not funny, but because all of our friends are doing it and because we can see all this and live that vicariously through that with them and also their lessons learned, it's huge. Like, I can pick up the phone and call Ron Patel, who was the chief business officer at New Mexico United, who used to run the Albuquerque Soul, who's running Rio Grande Valley, and ask him anything I want about anything related to business or football or people. And that's huge to have mentors and advisors like that. And it's from coast to coast and it's abroad too. So in some ways I feel like, yeah, it's still a little bit solopreneur and different things, but in other ways I've never had greater support, and it's needed.
Sure. I think through doing this, we're increasingly aware of the network of like-minded individuals and everything. You always want to start as a commune whereby you and Dennis and Peter and everyone else, we all come together and create this super club that are going to take on the behemoths, right? Because we're all so disparate and so far away, and we've all got two or three people around us, but not enough to take it onwards. Whereas if we all got together, we could do something magical, it feels. And you can't do any of it above and beyond a certain level. You can't do it all, right? Even if you lived alone without your other responsibilities, even if you didn't have a day job, you still could. But with real life coming in, it's unfeasible to think, I'm going to do the Alex Ferguson way. John, anything? I've got so many more, but.
Well, I want to know what your game day is like. Let's use your first team. Mm-hmm. What with your league and what are you drawing good crowds? Or is that part of your funding? What is match day like?
Yeah, it's not glamorous. I think it's very much Sunday league. We could have anywhere from 10 to 50 people show up for Open Cup games. I think one of our biggest crowds was a couple hundred, people want to see that. But we've also had guys that are, used to playing in front of 100,000 people, in countries abroad. So you have to kind of balance that and find the in between. The thing that I admire and respect about, certain leagues that are technically higher up the food chain at the pyramid is the standards and the rules that are involved. And we see more of that when we're involved in Open Cup. You have to have the locker room for the officials, and you have to have, this, that, or the other. And there's a huge price for all of that. It's not cheap, and even travel expenses too. U.S. soccer knows that to a certain extent. But for us, we made the conscious decision years ago to say, we're not going to join an acronym league just to put a badge on our shoulder to play to a certain quote-unquote standard. Because our product on the field is better than 90% of what they have, aside from their top couple of teams. And if we can drink and smoke and party and hang out and snowboard and ride and climb and do our stuff with our kids and still come out and compete against USL championship players, on any day, that's crazy. So I'm not going to go and pay 150, 200K, in my opinion, to really do it right, not do it on the shoestring like some others have had, to join an NPSL, especially when our friends behind the scenes are on the board and I know what that league is and what that entails. We don't need that credence at all. And we decided a long time ago to not do it. Would I love our match day experience to be more formal and better in terms of fan engagement and all those other kinds of things? Yes. But having traveled, having experienced it elsewhere, having experienced it with Harpo's, like at Detroit City and going to Minneapolis City, some of these other places, we know what we want to do and what we can do. And that's going to be a massive, massive push and pull and group effort, but we can do that. And so that's where it's just, the sky's the limit for that. But as it stands, yeah, it's not anywhere close to what we want it to be. And so there's a lot of questions about that. Sometimes people are how could you, not be doing this and that, and then you're going to go do whatever. And I'm not worried about it at all. Really not. That's because you bring in the experts to do that, right? Not just within the club, but also outside the club. And that's why you also have partners for that too, especially from a capital standpoint. So there's a lot more to come. Our goal right now, and our number one goal, has been to get back into Open Cup. So that's what we're pushing towards. We have a qualifier this weekend against one of our biggest opponents called Azteca, and they've done a hell of a job the last couple of years, and we always battle, and it's going to be a massive battle. So that's just the second round. But our goal this year is to obviously take it one game at a time, but to qualify for Open Cup. And there's a lot riding on qualifying for Open Cup, all the behind-the-scenes stuff, a lot of it. So to do that, then, we'll have a better opportunity to be in a more formal venue, and I think create a match day setting, and then be able to go and say, hey, listen, here it is, Joe's versus Pros. It's coming. We're playing at DU. We're playing at CU. Hell, maybe we play inside the Dick's Sporting Goods where the Rapids are, and this is what it is. So I think that our experience as a club and then the fan and user experience, if you will, that that's going to continue to improve season on season and year on year.
You dream of starting a community-focused soccer club? Are you intimidated by all the legal paperwork and red tape? Well, dream no longer. Introducing the Club Startup Packet from BKCU, your all-in-one guide to forming a successful soccer club in your own community. This comprehensive packet gives you everything you need to handle the administrative side of launching a new club. Just follow our proven templates to write your business plan, incorporate your entity, gain tax-exempt status, secure field use, and much, much more. No need to reinvent the wheel on filings and policies. Our documentation distills years of experience into easy-to-customize templates. Simply plug in your local details and turn your dream into a reality. Grab your administration packet today at dkcunited.com. and support independent soccer media in the process. The Club Startup Packet will take you from soccer passion project to fully operational club. Don't just dream it, do it.
So is it fair to say, and there's no shade in this, but like it hasn't been a priority, like on-field success has been far more important to you, the guys, than any sort of fan building?
Yeah, I mean, I do feel like we have a pretty far-reaching network in the sense that we now have guys who played for Harpos from over 40 states. We've had guys play abroad in 22 countries. Currently, we have guys that represent 13 different countries. So, you know, is everyone here in Colorado? Is everyone here in the backyard, you know, lined up around the, you know, like it was for a Swiftie concert, right? She shows up, 90,000 people want to go on the Mile High. Will it be like that? No, but we don't want it to be like that. We want it to be more intimate. We want it to have that authenticity. We don't need to have a 10,000 seat stadium and then have 100 people sitting down in the little barrel. You know what I mean? We'd rather have a smaller venue and then sell that out and have everything else going on. I mean, the Switchbacks are a perfect example of that. We used to play them on like a bog field in an old baseball stadium that was once covered with hay. And that was our Open Cup match. There's maybe 1,000 people there. Shit rain, gross, hot box the locker rooms. Like, just totally ridiculous. And I'm like, this is pro. My high school program is better than this. But what happened? Then the city, Colorado Springs, Olympic Development, grants, funds, all these things came together. They now play in an immaculate 8,000-seat stadium that's right downtown in a formerly blighted area that looks right up at Pikes Peak that just hosted the USL Midsummer Summit. And it's killer. And they're killing it. And all these other things will come out of the community because of it. All kinds of new developments are coming, whether they're social or economic. It's been a massive, massive catalyst. And our goal is to do that up north and do it better, frankly.
Can't fault it. It's always easier if someone else has done it, right? Because then you've got something to point to.
So, completely. Yeah. It's huge. And there's no shame in that, right? Because it's like, dude, like I'm a historian. I read thousands of books. You know, I mean, I want to learn lessons from the past so I don't repeat those mistakes in the present or the future. And that's the mindset, too, for football.
Sure. All right. I'm conscious of time. We've got about like 10 minutes or so left. Operationally and like with all the 17 hats that you wear, what's the stuff that gives you the biggest challenge? And then subsequent to that, what's the stuff that energizes you the most?
Lovely. The biggest challenge is other people's priorities. So even if Harpo's is way out up the list, even if they're married, they have a job, they have kids, they have a dog, they travel, whatever it is, there's always going to be conflicts. So I think the hardest part is assembling the most talented team that you can or squad, and then having them build that consistency and fluidity together so that they have a certain type of fitness and form and understanding. So from, I'd say 2015 to 2017, we had a lot of the same guys that were in. We had the same like 22 bros, like to the point where I didn't take the laundry like I do now, or you know, siphon it off to one of the coaches or to one of the captains and say do it, because we had the same guys. It was the same guys. We knew their numbers, we knew their habits. It was symbiotic. It just was. I think that's a huge challenge, and we see it, you know, with our contemporaries and other opponents. Then also nationally, it's not easy to build a team. It's not easy to build a squad. It's not easy to maintain and build a brand, a culture, an ethos, and then consistently want everyone to be hungrier than me to go and win, right? It's not easy. I think the thing I get off on the most, though, enjoy the most, that I think is awesome, I love recruiting. I think recruiting is awesome. I love meeting new people and then bringing them in, and then not selling them on. You know, it's the culture, so that it's like a train the trainer, but the culture is, and the standards and what we expect, those expectations for people with character, for people as a baller, that comes from everyone else. So someone might come in and then all of a sudden like, oh, okay, I get it. Or we don't do that here. This is what you need to do. And then they see it from the older generation because they go in an OG game. And even now with the women, like in their prior lives and wherever else they've been, last year they were losing to the team that they just beat 11-0 on Sunday. They lost to that team like 4-1 last season. We've had them for like, a couple months. And it's already like, let's go. This is what we're doing. This is how we're going to do it. We're going to do it together. We're going to customize it for you because obviously it's a little bit different, but like, let's figure it out and then go from there. So love the recruiting piece and then seeing people go on. That's really cool too. So yeah, that's it.
Okay. All right. Jolly, Joel, even not Jolly. Any closes?
It's too confusing. No, I think it's interesting. I think we've talked to a good, decent number of widespread group of clubs and club operators. And the reason I like doing this podcast is to learn the things that maybe inspire you about running your club and how they're different than the way I do it and how Dennis does it and how Hodeman does it. And I think it's kind of cool. I'm trying to think of a good comp. Christos was probably a good, I feel like Christos is in line with you guys in terms of like, obviously the winning priority, recruiting, building a culture of bros, which I'm going to steal your bro term a lot now. But like it feels like that's kind of how they operate. Like once you're in, you kind of fall in love with being part of it and the players stay and it just kind of grows like that. I think that's one of the things that we've struggled with. And we didn't even get in the calendar and when you play it, programming and all that stuff. But that's one of the things we struggle with being a short season summer team, basically for men's and women's. It's hard to get that fluidity of the group, right? Every year it's a new group, even though you might bring a bunch back, they haven't played together for 8.5 months. So it isn't the same group. So you lose some of that connectivity and, we're an important part of their life for 9 weeks and then back to school, back to whatever. And we're so like, we don't really get to ingrain in what they're about. Like Nick said it when we were chatting before, it's not necessarily that we're doing it right. I think clubs like yours bring a lot to how to take care of the group around you and the network that you're creating ultimately that will probably propel you to those next steps and stuff. So no question there. I just think it's cool to hear how other people do it. And as always, I have my notes of things that I'll talk to Nick about offline and we'll try to borrow them.
Is there any advice you would give anybody else who's either thinking of starting their own quote rec or wants to take to the next level or anybody? What advice?
Believe in yourself. And I think you're always going to have naysayers. So, as a kid, high school, college, professional career, I've had way more no's than yeses, and especially in sales. And you just have to learn to deal with objections and deal with people pushing back or maybe not rating you or whatever it might be. But I think you just need to keep pushing on. And so having that self-belief and also to a certain extent, self-reliance is important. But what's more important is then, and I think John said it really nicely, is taking care of those that are around you or that are in your stead. That's been huge for me and I think for us. So if you have a dream, if you have a vision, if you have a plan, then run with it. And we're on the verge of putting into place and starting to turn these different dials up that all this stuff has been happening forever. And in some ways it's been happening the whole life. So once it pops, you can bleep this out. It's going to be fucking awesome. It's going to be fucking awesome.
That's the social media tag right there. just going to be fucking awesome.
Yes. So that's
all good. All good. All right, my friend. Any questions for us before we bid farewell?
No, I just wanted to say thanks for having me. I'm just so curious what's next for you, you know, because you mentioned some challenges and alluded to some different things, but like, what's your next step and then what's your end game for DKU? What do you got?
That's you, Joe. That's 100% on you.
Old answer I've used many times. Eventually have enough community engagement and support that I don't have to be the president of our club anymore. Because I don't want it to be my thing, or, you know, proud to have been a part of the chaos we've created, but I'm not interested in being the 70-year president of a minor league soccer club. So that's part of it is establishing people that care about what we do, what we're about in the community, the impact we have. You said the word impact, which is one of my favorite words when talking about this. So continue to create that network where Nick's a volunteer, like I'm a volunteer. How do we create an internal staff that supports the image of what the club is about, both online and community impact, without burning out staff, but also creating opportunities for, you know, Nick and I to not just do soccer podcasts and talk about club business, but where we can have those beer sessions, even though we live an hour and 10 minutes apart. But all those things, all these different things have to come together and then ultimately be able to transition away from sort of the original group to maybe take a lesser role on, because many organizations and sports around here, you know, one main person runs it, and when they leave, it kind of flutters, and then somebody else picks up something new. Well, we're never going to have that longevity if I leave and it falls apart. Then not that it was a waste, but it didn't reach its potential. So I don't know what the timeline's going to be on that. I'm sure someday I'm going to just tell all these nice people I'm stepping down as president at the end of whatever season. And I will continue to serve in whatever role the board asks me to serve in. But that doesn't, I don't want to do that. Like, I still enjoy it. I enjoy talking to people, meeting people. I'm like you, I enjoy sitting at a bar, and I'm a soccer guy now, right? So everybody I walk up to in the street goes, "Hey, how's soccer going?" And most of them go, "How's the soccer league?" Like, well, it's a club, but anyway, at least you know the right sport. So I still enjoy it. And it's a way for me with my kids. Like you said, it's not a soccer thing. It's how I give back. Right. It's like, I could go work at a food pantry or volunteer time somewhere else. I volunteer my time with the club, and then we impact a bunch of nonprofits and a bunch of community members and a bunch of just a bunch of things. And I think the people here, and Nick doesn't live in town, but I think Nick sees it from monitoring the socials, that there seem to be people that just come to one game and kind of see what we're about, and they go like, "Oh my gosh, I want to be a part of that." And so I think we're getting there. I think we're turning a little bit of a corner, if that makes sense. So it's like super exciting, but for us, I'm just trying to improve every year. We try to improve match day experience on the field, all of it. We try to just keep grinding along and up the mountain. You're on the mountains. We don't have mountains here, so we're just climbing up the color.
No, I get it, man. I hear you. That's awesome. I mean, I think I told the joke within the group is always like, "Hey, you said you're gonna retire in 2017, and here we are. It's gonna be 2024, and I'm like, I'm still freaking here." You know, they're like, "What the hell?" But yeah, at some point it won't be here, and I actually tell my wife that, and for whatever reason she can't believe me, and she should. Because what this is and where we're at, yeah, I can't be the only one. You don't want to be the only one. You want to die in the chair, like, so to speak. It's like, yeah, it's got to be others, and they got to step up and run with it and then create it what they want and kind of mold it into their own thing in time too. And so that's the goal for what Heartbuzz is and where I'd love to see it go. And then the other projects in parallel, and that will probably become more of the focus. So we'll see what the brothers and sisters, so to speak, do. Once the old man moves on to something different.
No, it sounds exciting, and it sounds like you got a bunch of cool things happening, and I'm excited. Without having done a lot of homework with you guys and what you guys are about, it's been cool to chat, and I wish you all the best moving forward. It sounds like really cool stuff.
Thank you very much. Likewise, and wish you all the best, and if we can figure it out, let's play each other sometime.
We can't afford traveling, so you have to come to us, but we'd love to have it.
Maybe we could figure out a way to do that.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you for your time.